Boxcar 7-Eleven Old Time Radio Pod presents...
Stop. Irene Winker writes, I am teaching someone the English language, and he is having the devil of a time. He's pointed out that he's confused when he sees no egg in eggplant, no ham in hamburger, and neither pine nor apple in pineapple. That English muffins were not invented in England, and French fries were not invented in France. What do I tell him? Bob?
Yes?
Well, how do I answer, Irene?
Just say yes.
Just say yes?
Yes, just say yes. Look, whenever I can't answer a question, I just say yes.
But that makes no sense.
Yes, I know.
Well, that'll just add to his confusion.
If he's going to learn English, confusion is just part of it. Americans are all confused, so he'll just have to join the crowd. Just answer yes.
Bob, working with you all this time is certainly interesting.
Well, as my saintly mom always told me, when in Rome, do as the Romans. Just say yes.
Alrighty, I'll just say yes.
Yes.
Boxcar 7-Eleven Old Time Radio Pod. A great place to hang out.
Yes.
This is Alan Young with a welcome to Hollywood Star Playhouse, brought to you by the Bakers of America. Hollywood Star Playhouse, 30 minutes of mystery, thrills, drama by Hollywood's finest writers, featuring Hollywood's top stars, brought to you by the Bakers of America through the cooperation of your baker. Hello there, this is Wendell Niles. In a moment, we'll bring you Act One of today's partially transcribed story, Nor Gloom of Night, starring Mr. Alan Young. You know, it wasn't so long ago that most of our women baked their bread at home. But today, 95% of the many millions of loaves of bread we Americans eat every day, we buy from our bakers. And this is true only because choice fresh bread is made readily accessible every day in food stores and in supermarkets everywhere in our nation through large-scale methods of baking in plants across America, through fast modern means of distribution. Yes, baking for the tables of America is a big business. For aside from bread, who but our bakers could turn out such a varied assortment of pies, cakes, pastries, rolls, cookies, and donuts? So, for variety, convenience, economy, for nutritious good eating, let the Bakers of America help you serve better meals through bakery foods. And now, Act One of Nor Gloom of Night, starring Mr. Alan Young.
Well, I guess maybe it's partly my fault that this thing happened. You see, the trouble with me is I've got too much imagination. That is, for a postman. Most generally, people think it's a pretty dull job carrying a sack of spring sale ads, wish you were here cards, and Reader's Digest down West Side Avenue, twice on weekdays and once on Saturday mornings. But to me, it's more than that. Like the time when I delivered my Christmas loads during a hurricane.
You can't go out there, Ernie. As postmaster of Greenbrier in Indiana, I forbid it. You'll be blown to pieces.
Haven't got any choice, Mr. Henderson. You know what they say? Neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds. That's what they say. The people on my route are expecting these packages, and I'm going to deliver them, no matter what. Now, of course, that story may not be exactly true. It's Mr. Henderson who's always quoting about neither snow nor rain. And it wasn't quite a hurricane. Ain't never been one in Indiana. But it was an unusually strong wind for that time of year. Well, as you can see, I sort of like to exaggerate things. It never did a bit of harm. At least, it never did before. Now, I'm not sure. It all started a week ago last Wednesday. I had a normal afternoon load of mail, and I'd reached Ms. Whitcomb's place down near the end of my route, right on schedule.
Good afternoon, Ernie. I'll take those.
Regulations say mail's supposed to be put in the mailbox, Ms. Whitcomb.
Ernie.
Here you are. Three letters and an ad for Sullivan's sale on two-piece bathing suits.
That's better.
Well?
Oh, my sister in Biloxi. Hmm? That's in Mississippi, Ernie.
Yes, ma'am. Hey, hear about the fire at the Rialto Theater last night? Practically destroyed the whole building.
My son's getting married next July. Suppose that means another wedding present.
Probably won't be able to show any movies for 2-3 months. It'll just about mean building a whole new theater.
There wasn't any fire, Ernie.
Sure there was. Why,
Mrs. Arthur told me somebody dropped a match in the wastebasket in the gentleman's lounge. They had it out before the fire department even got there.
Oh. Well, it could have been mighty serious, couldn't it?
What's this?
Guess I better get a move on. I'll be behind schedule. See you tomorrow morning, Miss Wickham.
Yes. Just a minute, Ernie.
Yes.
Are you under the impression that Mr. C.W. Whitney lives at this address?
Why, no, of course not. The Whitneys live in the next block.
Then why are you delivering their mail to me?
What? Oh, I must have made a mistake. The names look kind of alike, I guess. Whitney, Whitcomb. I'm glad you caught it before... You didn't open it, did you?
Certainly I opened it. You handed it to me.
Well, you should have looked at the address, Miss Whitcomb.
Don't try to blame me for your mistake, Jenny. I wonder why anyone in New York would be writing to Mr. Whitney. Be a friend. Funny way to begin a letter.
Now, you give that back, Miss Whitcomb. You mustn't read it.
Arrangements are satisfactory. We can conclude our business at 7:30 on Thursday night.
It's against the law to read other people's mail.
The property at the corner of 3rd and Parkway will be ideal.
It's a federal offense, that's what it is. If you don't stop reading...
Here, Ernie. It's all about to it anyway.
I once heard of a fellow who got 15 years in prison for opening a letter. It wasn't his.
I'm sure you did.
Now, if I can... get it sealed up again. Mr. Whitney might not notice.
I don't think it'll make any difference, Mr. Whitney, one way or the other.
Maybe. Well, if he doesn't look too close, it might get by. Still, it wasn't right of you to read it, to, like taking the law in your own hands.
You delivered it to me.
That was an accident. I ought to report you to Mr. Henderson.
Oh, honestly, the way you exaggerate, Ernie. You'd think I'd done something terrible.
Well, you have. You've made me 3 minutes late. That's what you've done.
I'm hardly responsible for the inefficiency of government employees. It's enough that I pay your salary.
Well, when I got to the Whitney's house, I walked up onto the porch as quiet as I could, hoping I'd be able to slip the letter into the box without Mrs. Whitney or anybody seeing me. Didn't you know that was the one day I'd have trouble getting the box to open? Something must have hit against it, because one corner was bent tight.
Having trouble, Ernie?
Huh? Oh, Mr. Whitney. What are you doing home today?
Just a touch of laryngitis. Thought I'd give my voice a little rest.
Sorry to hear that. Here's a letter for you.
Thanks.
Well, so long. Anything wrong, Mr. Whitney?
What do you mean?
About the letter.
Why, no. Of course not. Nothing but an advertisement.
Somehow it didn't strike me funny when he said it. Almost anything nowadays can be turned into an ad. Besides, I had other things to think about. I was busy trying to make up for lost time. And I finished up the afternoon right on the dot. Well, maybe I was a minute late, but not more. And that's the truth, so help me. Anyhow, next day was Thursday, beginning of the month, so you could see what that means. This month's bills, last month's bills, and for some of the folks on my route, they have to go back even further. And to top it off, the Phillips Airedale nipped the back pocket out of my brand new uniform. Don't know how he does it, but the dog can always tell when I'm wearing one of my good outfits. Well, by Friday morning, I'd forgotten all about Mr. Whitney's letter, and I was having breakfast in the diner across from the post office. I'd been reading the paper for maybe 3-4 minutes The article is on the second page.
Here's your egg, Ernie.
Thanks, Alice. Hit and run victim, Miss C.W. Whitney. Miss C.W. Whitney was killed yesterday evening about 7:30 p.m. by a hit-and-run gray coupe while she and her husband were crossing 3rd Street at the corner of Parkway Avenue. Due to the light rain, 3rd and Parkway.
Hello, that vacant lot near the school.
Alice, has Chief Gordon been in yet?
Of course not, Ernie. He never has breakfast before 9. And you know...
When he comes in, you tell him I want to see him as soon as I finish my morning delivery.
All right, Ernie.
Hey, aren't you going to finish your egg? Yeah, they sure do a fine job on electric trains these days. Never saw one as real as this.
Look, you've got to listen to me, Mr. Gordon. You're the chief of police. You're the only one.
Watch out, Ernie. It's going to jump the track. No, sir, she made it. How do you like that for a sharp turn?
Won't you switch that off for a minute, please?
Well, tomorrow's Freddy's birthday. I gotta test the train before I give it to him.
May not get another chance. Isn't a murder more important than birthday presents?
It would be if there'd been a murder. Now, you listen to me, Ernie. I talked to Mr. Whitney last night. He was all broken up about his wife's death.
He was just acting or something. I tell you, he had a letter about it, setting up the whole thing. He hired him to do it.
Accusing a man of something like that is pretty serious, Ernie.
Oh, I know.
Now, I know. You got a way of building a thing up, and
you don't have to believe me, Chief Gordon. Miss Whitcomb read the letter. Ask her about it.
Well, it isn't that I don't believe you exactly, Ernie. It's just that you jumped to such radical conclusions.
Ask Miss Whitcomb what the letter said.
I might send somebody by later. Right now, the deputies are both trying to get a cat down from the telephone pole behind Cook's drugstore.
Couldn't you talk to her yourself?
Afraid that wouldn't do much good. Mrs. Whitcomb's got kind of a grudge against me. I judged against her watermelon pickles at the county fair 3 years ago. She ain't forgot it.
If somebody being killed is just a joke to
you... It's no joke to me, Ernie, but I'm not so sure about that imagination of yours.
Chief Gordon, I'm telling you the truth, so help me.
Well, all right. I guess it can't do any harm to talk to Mrs. Whitcomb. Now, help me put this track away first and be careful you don't bend it.
I never heard of such a thing, accusing me of reading other people's mail. Don't you think I know it's against the law?
Nobody's accusing you of breaking the law, Mrs. Whitcomb. It's just that Ernie says...
Ernie says. Now, he's certain to make trouble for me, but I never thought he'd go this far.
This isn't about you, Miss Whitcomb. It's about Mr. Whitcomb.
And you, Chief Gordon, believing such an outrageous lie. Why, everybody knows you can't put any stock in a word, Ernie says.
Mrs. Whitcomb, I'm afraid you don't understand.
There's nothing I want to understand. I did not read any letter addressed to Mr. Whitney. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Mrs. Whitcomb.
Then you'll have to excuse me. I'm putting up some pickles. Not that you know anything about pickles, Chief Gordon.
She did read it. She stood right here and opened it and read it.
Come on, Ernie.
But, Chief Gordon, I'm telling you, that
letter... Ernie, even if there was such a letter, what does it prove? All it says is Mr. Whitney's interested in some property at 3rd and Parkway, and there's a deal concerning it, and... there's something about 7:30 on Thursday night. Mr. Whitney and his wife go down there, maybe to look it over again or something, maybe to conclude the deal. There's an accident. Mrs. Whitney is killed. Now, doesn't that make just as much sense as jumping to the idea that he took her there so somebody could murder her?
But why did he lie to me about the letter, then?
Some people like to keep their business private. Well, Ernie?
Okay. Okay, I guess it... could have happened that way. Maybe it was true. Maybe Mr. Whitney and his wife were just out for a walk, but I just couldn't believe it. I wasn't sure why until the next morning when I walked up Mr. Whitney's steps with a 5 or 6 sympathy cards addressed to him. It was just as he opened the door that I remembered something in that newspaper item. A man who stays home from work with laryngitis doesn't go out for an evening walk. not when it's raining.
Good morning, Ernie.
Morning. I want to tell you how sorry I am about Miss Whitney.
Thank you, Ernie. I understand.
Here's your mail. I don't suppose you'll be buying that property now.
Property?
On 3rd and Parkway, where the accident happened.
What are you talking about?
Isn't that why you were there? Some kind of business deal?
What gave you that idea?
I don't know. I heard it somewhere, I suppose.
Why? As a matter of fact, I was thinking about buying on that corner, but I didn't know that anyone here knew about it. I was carrying on the negotiations by mail.
I guess you can't keep anything a secret in a small town like this.
I guess not. You haven't been reading my mail, have you, Ernie?
No. No, of course not.
I didn't think you really had. You know, that can get you into a lot of trouble.
We'll return for Act Two of Nor Gloom of Night, starring Mr. Alan Young, in just a moment. But first, I want you to hear some sounds that are familiar all over our country this time of year. Let me open the window. Ah, there's the music of America. Youngsters hard at play, getting plenty of good, healthy exercise, burning up lots of energy. And Mother, when mealtime rolls around these days, be sure that your hard-playing youngsters get plenty to eat, and plenty of the right kind of food. One food that is always right for children is enriched bread. Because bread, enriched with important vitamins and minerals, is energy-rich food. In fact, bread is lots of good foods in one. Flour, milk, shortening, yeast, sugar, and salt. Foods generous in proteins and calcium. And isn't it encouraging to know that while your children are eating enriched bread, they're getting the wonderful health-giving vitamins of the B complex, elements every child needs every day to maintain a well-balanced diet. And of course, Mother, you know that bread supplies lots of food for very little cost. For bread supplies more nutritive value, penny for penny, than any other food eaten every meal. So serve enriched bread at each meal every day to help keep your family healthy and strong. And now, Act Two of Nor Gloom of Night, starring Mr. Alan Young.
By the end of the week, I'd made up my mind to forget all about Mr. Whitney and his wife's death. Maybe Chief Gordon was right. Maybe I had put two and two together and come up with five. When you get in the habit of elaborating on things, you sometimes forget just what's the fact and what you sort of threw in for a good measure. But after lunch, that was on Friday, something happened that proved I'd been right for sure. Yes, sir, I'd been right for dead sure.
West, southwest, west, north.
I was arranging my mail as the sorting clerk tossed it in the west side bin. It was a heavy load for an off-season. There was a lot of out-of-town stuff, because the westbound trains had been held up by a tremendous hailstorm the day before. Matter of fact, I hardly noticed the letter at first. I just stuck it in the back of my pouch for the rest of the first class. And then I remembered. That spidery handwriting. That New York postmark. And the same square envelope.
Ernie, you must be out of your mind. This post office is not going to open a letter just because you happen to think it's important.
But it's from the same man, Mr. Henderson. We can read it and find out who it is. Have him arrested.
For what?
For murdering Miss Whitney. This letter will prove it. He's probably trying to get more money for doing it, or maybe he's blackmailing Mr. Whitney, or maybe...
This is utter nonsense, Ernie.
Or maybe Mr. Whitney's hired him to murder somebody else. Sure, that's what it is. Sure, don't you see, Mr. Henderson? That's why he's writing again. Don't you see?
No, I do not.
Somebody else is going to get murdered, Mr. Henderson. I'm positive.
Now, you listen to me, Ernie. This is a perfect example of the way your mind works. First, you come in and tell me you found a letter that looks like one you delivered before. The next thing I know, you're certain it's from the same man. Then you decide it's a blackmail note, and now you're yelling that it's a plan to murder somebody.
I'm not asking you to take my word for it, Mr. Anderson. Just unseal that envelope and read it. If I'm wrong, you can put it back together again.
Ernie, I knew your father. He was a fine man and an honest one. And I'm going to talk to you just as he would if he were still alive. Son, this overdeveloped imagination of yours, perhaps it doesn't do much harm as a rule.
I didn't imagine this letter, sir. It's right here in my hand.
But when your daydreams cause you to suggest tampering with the United States mail, they're dangerous. Downright subversive to the operation of this post office. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, sir.
Furthermore, in the future, please remember that your job is to deliver the mail. The post office department is not in the business of catching murderers. All right, Ernie. You may go.
You're 12 minutes late on your route already.
But, Mr. Henry...
There are plenty of applicants for the job of mail carrier, Ernie.
That afternoon, West Side Avenue seemed twice as long as it ever had before. And that letter in the first-class section of my bag felt like I weighed a couple of tons. In 5 minutes, I'd get to Mr. Whitney's house, and then it was too late. He'd just look at the envelope, stick it in his pocket, and slam a door, and there'd be nothing I could do to stop him. Anyhow, I glanced up and saw Ms. Whitcomb peering out the window waiting for her mail. Then I got an idea. I pulled the square envelope out of my pouch and held it in my hand.
Well, Ernie, by the time you got here, I've been getting my drapes all unpleated, staring out the window.
I'm right on schedule, Miss Whitcomb.
Suppose you are. Don't see why. Just because I live out at the west end of town, I have to get my mail an hour later than anybody else. What are you waiting for, Ernie? Give it to me.
Yes, ma'am.
Wonder if there's anything from my aunt. Last I heard, she was getting better. Suppose that means she's going to die.
That square one's from out of town.
Oh, New York postmark. Well, suppose she might have had a son mail it for her. He works in the city. Well, good afternoon, Ernie.
Aren't you going to open it?
That's what one usually does with mail, Ernie, and I'm quite capable of reading my own letters without your help. Ernie Evans, come back here.
Yes, Miss Whitcomb?
Just what do you think you're doing, young man?
Why, I...
This letter's for Mr. Whitney, and you know it.
You mean you opened it?
I did no such thing. You and that so-called police chief aren't going to trick me into reading somebody else's mail. Here's the letter, just exactly the way you gave it to me. Good day.
I put the square envelope in the back of my pouch and tried hard not to think about it as I kept walking on down the block. But as I stepped over the Jenkins kid's roller skates, I found myself wondering who was going to be killed this time. Then I remembered. Ms. Whitney had a sister living over on the north side. Maybe she was the one. I'll bet that's it. As soon as I get off my route, I'll telephone her. I'll warn her to... I reached into my pouch for the next delivery. I pulled out 3 cards and a square envelope. I was at the Whitney house. Now I had to deliver the letter. I looked up. Expected Mr. Whitney to be waiting for me, but he wasn't there. All the shutters were closed tight, and welcome mat was gone from front of the door. I didn't go directly to the mailbox. I don't know why exactly. I felt that I wanted to see Mr. Whitney face to face. Maybe I had a nerve to tell him, but he couldn't get away with it. Not this time. Maybe I'd be able to say, I know what you're up to. Or maybe I'd be too scared to say anything. Then I saw the slip of pink paper stuck in the corner of the mailbox. Change of address form. C.W. Whitney. New address. General delivery. New York City. The envelope was still in my hand as I walked on down toward the corner of 11th Street. I knew why Mr. Whitney left town. Now he'd have a perfect alibi for the second murder. Maybe the killing was already over. Maybe there was nothing I could do, or maybe it was only a matter of hours or minutes. I'd never know unless I opened the letter. I pushed through the gate of the corner house and, in force of habit, looked around for Tony, the Airedale. He wasn't in sight. Ms. Phillips was down on her hands and knees, weeding her marigold plants.
Hello, Ernie. You're right on time. I always know when it's 4:30. You're never more than a minute off.
Yeah, I guess so. Here's your mail.
Thank you. Isn't very exciting. Oh, is that other letter for me?
No, no, it's not.
Well, you look tired, Ernie. Would you like a cup of hot tea? It won't take a minute.
No, thanks, Miss Phillips. I better be getting along. See you tomorrow.
All right, Ernie.
Down, Tony. Oh. Down, get away.
Tony, you bad dog, get down. I've got a collar, Ernie. You better run. Tony, you're a wicked dog. Ernie never tried to hurt you.
I was almost to the corner when I stopped and caught my breath and shifted my pack around. Then I realized I didn't have the letter. It had been in my hand when Tony had charged at me. I must have dropped it. From across the Phillips fence, I could see it, a white square on the red brick wall. Tony and his mistress had disappeared, so I opened the gate and reached for it. Tony had come around the house and beat me to it. He set up a guard over the letter and was worrying the envelope with his teeth. Here, Tony. Give it to me. Nice dog. You don't want to eat that, Tony. Here, I'll just... Listen, Tony, I gotta have that letter. Give it to me, Tony. Give it to me. Tony, let go! The envelope had been chewed open. The bottom half of the letter was in shreds. I stepped off the curb and started across 11th Street, trying to stuff the letter back in the envelope. And then I saw what it said. Honest, I couldn't help it. It said, "Dear friend, new arrangements are satisfactory. We can stay the appointed courier at 4:30, corner of West Side and 11th. He's never late." Never thought I'd be grateful to the Phillips dog. But if he hadn't made me late, I'd have been in the middle of the street. The gray coupe would have hit me instead of that telephone pole. As it was, it snapped the pole in two and didn't stop till it was halfway into the Phillips living room. Well, maybe not quite that far. But it did hit the pole. You can see the big gash in it. And that's the truth. So help me.
For that. You certainly chalked up a good one for our series, and I hope you'll come back again real soon.
You won't ever ask me twice, Wendell, particularly if I can always work with people like Virginia Gregg, Gene Tatum, Jeanette Nolan, Herb Vigran, Parley Bear, and Paul Frees. Thanks a lot, folks.
Thanks again, Alan. We'll hear about the star of next week's Hollywood Star Playhouse show, Mr. Lee Bowman, right after our Bakers of America home economist, Miss Helen Reed, gives you an ounce of suggestion about pound cake. Miss Reed?
Thank you, Mr. Niles. The uniced pound cake you can buy at your bakery, at any food store or supermarket, is one of the best friends a dessert-minded housewife ever had. It's a cake you can serve loads of different ways. And here's one way you might like to try. Peach shortcake a la mode. Cut half-inch slices of your pound cake. Then, from brick ice cream, also cut half-inch slices. Sandwich the ice cream between two layers of cake. Then cover each serving with peaches, either fresh, frozen, or canned. And if you feel like really splurging, add a dash of whipped cream on top. Peach shortcake a la mode is the sort of dessert that takes only a moment to fix, but it looks and tastes as deluxe and delicious as something that might have taken hours of preparation. Why not buy a pound cake tomorrow? Taste what grand desserts you can make with it.
Thank you, Miss Reed. And now here's a word about next week's thrilling story on Hollywood Star Playhouse starring Mr. Lee Bowman.
You know what you want, so you wait, because it's big enough to wait for. And you figure out how to work it when the time comes. Then you find you're walking towards death.
because you've stepped into the wrong pair of shoes.
Alan Young will soon be seen in the RKO production, Androcles and the Lion. Life's partially transcribed story was written for Mr. Young by Robert Libet and Frank Burt. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any similarity to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Wendell Niles inviting you to be with us again next Sunday for the Bakers of America program, Hollywood Star Playhouse. Enjoy another half hour of fine entertainment brought to you direct from Hollywood by your baker. The baker who supplies your grocer, the baker who calls at your door, and the baker in your bake shop, all helping you serve better meals through bakery foods.